Now, the summer of 2014 was devastating for the Gaza Strip. Over 2,000 people killed. 600 of those were children. Now, there's a fundraising song which has been brought together, which is being launched, and there's a strong Donegal interest in that, including John Cutliffe, who's a musician, of course. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Very well indeed. Thank you for joining us on the programme. Now, we're going to hear the song and we're going to discuss that. But firstly, tell us why you felt you wanted to and needed to get involved in raising awareness, raising funds, the motivation behind the single, effectively.
Well, I was in East Jerusalem. We'd been in Jerusalem for a couple of years and we had just left. And then things got really bad in Gaza. My wife is an aid worker and had worked in Gaza for 4 years. So she really wanted to go back and help her team that were there because they were under a lot of severe fire. And so I went back with her and I went for one visit to a hospital in East Jerusalem. I thought it was going to be one visit where they were bringing patients out from Gaza, the really badly wounded people who had been in hospitals that had been blown up, that sort of thing. And I ended up going there every day for 5 weeks to the hospitals in East Jerusalem, three different hospitals. The main one was St. Joseph's, and there were a lot of children coming in, missing limbs, missing eyes, children who had seen their entire families die, lost multiple loved ones. And a few of those children also died in the hospital when I was there. One little girl who I'm very happy to say is still alive is Shaima, who the song is named after. She's 5 now, but she was 4 then. She had seen most of her family killed. She herself wasn't expected to survive. She had bad abdominal wounds, but the amazing doctors in St. Joseph's Hospital fixed her up, and then we got the good news that her dad was actually still alive and in Gaza in a shelter. So now they've been reunited since.
And that's very positive. This was a story that was all over social media, all over traditional media, to slightly lesser extent, while it was happening. And I say that knowing that it is still happening effectively. These people are still living, not necessarily, with shells coming down on a daily basis or attacks on a daily basis, but living with the devastation of what happened during the summer and previously. In other words, it hasn't gone away by any stretch of the imagination. It's still a very live problem.
It is. It has been a live problem since the blockade went up over 7 years ago. Airstrikes happen all the time. Fishing boats are fired on. But getting away from the politics of that side of things, there is a huge humanitarian crisis now. This was the very worst of the bombardments this summer. And so the people there, they have electricity maybe for 1 or 2 hours every 2 days. They've got no clean water supply. There's still hundreds of thousands of people living in temporary shelters, including UN schools, that sort of thing. And it's winter time. It's quite sunny today, but winter is about to hit pretty hard in sort of the end of December, January, February. And these kids have nothing.
I saw on
scars.
I beg your pardon, John. I saw a picture of an area where food was being handed out, and it looks like it's photoshopped. It's that remarkable. This picture looks like it's photoshopped, where you have a line of people going as far as the eye can see. I don't know how many people, but it's thousands upon thousands, all filtered through down a street, surrounded by demolished, blown up buildings. I mean, that's what's happening right now. People just queuing in those numbers to try and get sustenance.
I don't know if it's a protective thing, but a lot of the photographs that people see, they do look like film sets of apocalyptic movies. It's actually devastating in there. My wife has been an aid worker for quite a few years, and you would think at this stage she'd be immune to a lot of it. But when she came out the last time, not that long ago, she was in bits. It really, really affected her badly. And some of the injuries that I've seen, I was in seriously traumatized for some time, and still am when I think of it sometimes.
Yeah. Now, when after you met Shaima, who inspired you to write a song, you got part of that song together, I understand, and then you got in touch with your mate Rory Gallagher from Kilcar, of course, as well, and he's well known, of course, for Jimmy's winning matches and everything that he did before and since. And you've teamed up with him on this and others. Tell us about the song before we hear it, John.
Well, the song I wrote one morning just before going to the hospital, and I wrote like the bare bones of it, bits of words, bits of the melody and stuff. And I sent it off to Rory, who I haven't actually seen for over 30 years. He used to play in a band with his parents, Paul and Mary B and Pluto. And I haven't seen Rory since he was four. But we're in touch, so I sent him the song. He finished it and sent it back to me in what I describe now as a beautiful lullaby for peace. Mm. It is just, I think he's just really done an amazing job. So I immediately got in touch with some people, a string arranger friend of mine in Bristol. I got in touch with Liam O'Weenley from Hot House Flowers, a friend of mine. Muireann Nicolet from Danu is a friend of mine. Martin Turish, who's in Alton. A lot of people I've known and worked with over the years in music. And we got three choirs. We got members of the Inis Oireann Gospel Choir who are incredible. We got the Wee Glee Singers, who are a kids group from Bolcrana, who were beautifully conducted by Bernie Doherty. We got a choir of children from Jerusalem called Sununu, who were conducted by another friend of mine who would visit the hospitals with me, Samira Kalubi. She's amazing. And a load of other people on there sing and play, Bunkrana people, a lot of Bunkrana people on there.
And the money, the profits from the downloads of the song go to charities helping children in Gaza, of course, as they face a very uncertain future. But the one thing that is certain about the future is that it's going to be difficult, which is terrible when we talk about children, but such is the situation there. How do people get hold of the song just before we hear it, John?
Well, if you go to Facebook, facebook.com/ShymaSmiled, ShymaSmiled. You can get the links to iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Music. It's going to be in 80 stores worldwide, and we've already got into the iTunes charts in Ireland this week. So
brilliant!
That's pretty good. And we'll link it.
We'll link it via our Facebook page as well, because it can be hard to pick up the links on the phone. But we'll do that from our end too, John. Thank you very much for joining us on the program. We wish you the very best with the single.
Thank you very much, Greg, and a happy Christmas.
And a happy Christmas to you too.
Even though her world was falling down, as the sky turned rubble grey, through the darkness she still saw the light. Shima smiled for me. Shima smiled for me.
Through the empty streets where she once played, with her friends who've disappeared, as the smoke from
I'm
Okay, a lot of Donegal voices on that track, raising funds for the children of Gaza. A caller says, Greg, apparently there's something called the Pirate Bay. It's been closed down again. Don't know if you've heard about it. Pirate Bay is a torrent site, isn't it, where people share illegally downloads. But Pirate Bay is very resilient. And my understanding from what I've been reading, because I have an interest in the tech side of things, is that it's already back up and running in Costa Rica. Would you believe? So it's literally Pirates of the Caribbean now out there, isn't it? But yep, Pirate Bay, it's illegal and it's damaging of legitimate musicians and movie makers and what have you. But lots of people use it and it's actually back up and running again already. But that's off the back of a text we received to the programme a little earlier. Right, next up on the programme, figures were announced during the week as it relates to visits to libraries in County Donegal. Now, with the internet and mobile phones and how people access information, how many people would you say visited libraries in Donegal alone? Well, the figure, 335,000 visits to libraries in the county. I'm delighted to say that Eileen Burgess, County Librarian, joins me on the programme now. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning.
The library's alive and well.
Yes, I'm pleased to say that our visitor numbers are alive and kicking, and we're keeping very busy even despite the circumstances that we're currently working in. I'm pleased to say that the numbers visiting libraries are higher than they have been in years. It's increasing all the time.
What do you put that down to, Eileen? Because it is interesting, because in my preamble there I sort of indicated my feelings that it would be the, you know, in the other direction, but obviously I'm wrong, thankfully.
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of factors coming into play. Part of the reason being maybe that with the recession, people are looking for a place that they can actually find free reading material. And maybe there's an understanding as well that particularly for children, it's of critical importance that they have a good level of reading and writing and numeracy as well, of course. And people are taking up the opportunity to borrow good quality reading materials in abundance at their local libraries.
And loads of different material being taken and consumed. But what jumped out at me, the most borrowed adult non-fiction title, The Official Driver's Theory Test. Very practical, but not very sexy.
Well, we do have sexy stuff as well, I can assure you of that. But at least it also shows that people know that they can get the practical books and information that they need at their local library. And I think it's actually very interesting that people are borrowing that title from their libraries. They're choosing to borrow it from their libraries as opposed to buying it. So it shows that there is a real need for the library to have multiple copies of books like that to provide to people across the county, and we do that.
What kind of books were taken out? Maybe the top one or two, maybe in the fiction category?
In the fiction category, Donal Ryan's books are proving very popular. And, you know, as he says, he has been writing for years, but suddenly he's an overnight sensation. And he has a new book of short stories coming out now quite soon, and I'm very much looking forward to reading that. And I think that's one of the beauties about libraries, that you will find a huge range of material. There'll be new authors like Donal Ryan. He's an Irish author. And then, for instance, the next author that's up in our list is Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl, which has just been a very recent blockbuster film.
And coincidentally, I watched it last night.
Yeah, and it's an absolutely gripping film, and the book is the same.
Have
and
you seen both?
I have.
Right, you're going to switch on your critic's hat now. How did the film compare to the book? Because it's a complex story, which I won't give away, but it's one thing presenting it as a screenplay, but it's another doing it on paper. So which did you prefer?
Well, I have to say, I did find the film absolutely fascinating, and I think it can be very interesting to see the film and to read the book, and it's a constant debate about which you should actually do first. Normally people would say that you should actually read the book first and then see the film, but other people will say, well, you know, then sometimes it can be disappointing because you expect something in the book that was in the film.
Yeah.
But you have to approach both, I think, with an open mind, and I definitely think in that case both are well worth seeing.
And sit back and enjoy it. We're overcritical, I think, sometimes, and expect to be too entertained. Now, as it relates to non-fiction, Michael Rossen's, as it were, going on a bear hunt, that was the second most popular borrowed book.
That's a children's title, or Going on a Bear Hunt. And, you know, that actually is a title that has stood the test of time. That book has been around for quite some years, and it's still proving very popular. And the same applies to our second most borrowed book, on the one on the non-fiction side, Donegal Folk Tales. You know, those are old folk tales retold by an author that's living in Donegal now, Joe Brennan, and he's a very good storyteller as well. So it's great that he has put his work into print now, and we're very pleased that that's topping the poll in Donegal libraries.
Now, I'm not going to push you to say anything you don't want to, because that wouldn't be fair. But when I mentioned this story on social media during the week, a few people were saying, and they're closing libraries down,
given, you know, people can't understand it given the popularity of it. What do you have to say on that, if anything?
Well, naturally, I would like to say that we're opening libraries as opposed to closing them, but we are, I suppose, really, we're working in a very difficult situation now, and we're losing staff. We have lost, I suppose, investment in our book fund, and inevitably that has a consequence on public opening hours. What I would say is that nationally we have an like a national public library strategy now, Opportunities for All, and part of the process there will be that over the whole country, the government and local government in particular will be looking at public libraries' opening hours and working to the best, you know, possible opening hours that we can provide in the circumstances that we're in. So what I would say is, as well as the physical libraries, there is also online services available now that might not have been available in the past when people maybe depended more on the physical library.
Yeah.
So it is possible to actually go online now onto our own website, donegallibrary.ie, and you can actually download magazines, for instance, from our website.
But we don't want, and that's a brilliant service, but we don't want to lose this, obviously, because, look, 17 million visits across the entire country. People want the hard copy still. So hopefully as things improve, if they are, the investment will go back into that area, and I'm sure you'd be happy with that too.
I'd be very happy with that. And of those 17 million, that's actually quite an interesting statistic, because a number of years ago, the number of visits was 14 million.
Wow.
So you can see that across the country, the demand for public library services is there. And if you go into a public library in Donegal or anywhere else, you'll see a building that's actually, it's a publicly funded, it's open to absolutely everybody, and everybody can come in and use the services there without question. And there are very few places that you can actually go where, you know, you won't actually be kind of there demanded to spend some money or anything like that. You can spend as long as you like in the library service.
And get some useful advice too, and a bit of help along the way, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't want to talk to anybody, that's okay too.
Listen, Eileen, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much, and continued success. It's nice to see, you know, maybe something that seems a little bit more traditional growing in popularity as opposed to going the other direction.
Thank you very much. And I would just encourage your listeners as well to have a look at our website, donegallibrary.ie, and you can have a look at the events calendar there, and you can see what's happening in your local library all year round.
County Librarian Eileen Burgess, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, keep your texts coming to 086 77 00 555. Now, a tragic event on the streets of Dublin in recent days has brought the issue of homelessness right back into focus. It's not a new problem, and it's certainly not a problem that's going to go away very easily. And it's not just an urban problem, of course. This is not just Dublin and Cork. It's in pretty much every town in Ireland. Claire McTernan is manager of the North West Simon community and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Claire.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure. It is fair to say that there could be this perception out there that this is a Dublin problem, this is a Cork or a Galway problem, but it's not that simple. It's countrywide, isn't it?
Yes, it is, unfortunately. I suppose it's at its most visible in Dublin, but what we're seeing regionally is that there's an increase, there's great awareness, I suppose, of the services homeless organisations such as ourselves can offer. And unfortunately, you know, the economic recession has continued. There is a shortage of accommodation, and people are making do, maybe staying with friends, neighbours, family, sharing with others involuntarily, staying in very poor quality accommodation.
In other words, you don't have to be sleeping on the street to be homeless.
Exactly, because the reality is, if you're at the mercy of someone else's goodwill, then obviously that goodwill can come to an end tomorrow. So,
are the causes,
you know, that leaves a person in a very vulnerable and risky position because they don't have a home of their own.
Are the causes of homelessness different in urban and rural areas?
They probably... Well, I suppose what we see in our own region would be there would be greater issue with alcohol than drugs. The poverty would be the same. Maybe greater levels of family breakdown. I'm not saying greater levels, but obviously because there isn't the anonymity in a rural area, people know each other, so it can be difficult just if you have a challenging issue just to fade into the background. And I suppose that's, you know, maybe would be different. There's the anonymity that would be there in an urban area if people have an issue. But, you know, certainly the issues similar, mental health, we would find literacy, you know, dealing with bureaucracy, that's a huge contributing factor. People ignoring letters, ignoring, being afraid of officialdom. And then if there's a problem, it can often be too late and they find themselves without a home. because they didn't address maybe certain administrative matters, you know.
Tell us about the support the Northwest Simon community offers.
Yes, well, I suppose that there are kind of two kinds of people would present. One is the person who has no, they have been evicted today or they've no accommodation, they had to leave their accommodation for one reason or another. So immediately we would try and source that person emergency accommodation. We're not a provider, but we would try and source it for them elsewhere, emergency bed and breakfast if needed, until we can try and source accommodation through the private rental and assist them with the paperwork necessary for that. For a person who maybe has been issued with a PRTB letter or is it behind, is in arrears, they're concerned about their future in this accommodation, then we would try and work with them on their budgeting, on doing a repayment plan for their utilities or their landlord, on filling in the paperwork needed, on making sure that they're in receipt of all their income supplements that they're entitled to, and just trying to ensure that they get to remain in that home.
Is there a concern that we haven't reached the peak here and maybe even the demographic of those homeless may change? Because what we are, if we are coming out of recession, seeing, we are seeing it difficult for people to buy homes because mortgages are hard to obtain unless you've got money already. There are a lot of, we're hearing about a lot of repossession orders that will be coming through the courts. And then we see this increase in rental prices, perhaps obviously more notably in more urban areas. But do you think perhaps the problem is going to have to get worse before it gets better unless there's intervention?
Yeah, I think unfortunately we were very disappointed that the rent caps for rent supplements have not been reviewed. I know there would be political concern in opening, I suppose, an unrealistic expectation of what rents will be paid from the state, but we think that moment has passed actually and that they need to have a more realistic look. And the second concern we would have is just that, you know, repossessions and things coming up in the new year. But I suppose we deal with the most vulnerable person.
Yeah.
The person who maybe doesn't have capacity to assist themselves, or maybe if their mental health isn't great that they struggle just to motivate themselves to chase up on these things.
And it's amazing work that you do, and you do it through the goodwill of people, because you do not receive government money, do you not? You rely on donations.
We don't receive government money, and we're not sure that this is going to be addressed anytime soon, unfortunately, with the cutbacks. It's general cutbacks cumulatively for people. And I suppose just to say in this region, we, you know, the headline is that there's been a 30% increase in our demand for service. And we were surprised at this because the country is meant to be coming out of recession. We're not seeing that in the Northwest region, unfortunately.
And there are a number of fundraisers and events happening between now and Christmas to assist, isn't there?
Yes, there is. We have a Santa Dash on Sunday in Downings. And we'd like people to come out and support that. It should be a fun event. There's Sing for Simon, there's different jumper events, and, you know, there's different events going on coming up to Christmas.
So if you see the members out and about and you have a spare few pence or pounds or euros, then share them and it'll be assisting
yes,
in the great
and
work.
And people could log on to our website, www.northwestsimon.ie, and make a donation online if they wish.
Okay, and it's such a cold morning this morning, so it's no harm remembering those who aren't lucky enough to have a roof over their own heads. Claire, we really appreciate you coming on the programme this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Champagne afternoon tea at Cafe Arnoux Cocktail and Wine Bar, Dunfanaghy. The perfect way to enjoy your afternoon. Cafe Arnoux Dunfanaghy are sponsors of the weekend edition.
And you're very welcome back. Now, it's not something you get to say very often, but I'm now joined on the programme by a Himalayan trekker from Fulkara. Mohan Nepal, a very good morning to you.
Hello.
Mohan, you are originally from India, but now living in Fulkara. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
I am from India, is a northeast India, is in Himalaya. So it's called Sikkim, as a part of, like a small state in Himalaya, is part of India. So I born in Himalaya, so I was very young, and I start doing trekking and pottering around the Himalayas, doing Sherpas. So just believing and studying. So I met my wife in 2008 in an Everest base camp. So I used to be doing the trekking guide for lots of mountaineering and trekking peoples in Himalaya and like different part of Himalaya. So that time I was in Everest base camp. So I was with the Irish group from Ireland, all over the Ireland. There was 11 people. So one of them was my wife. So I met her, and she come to India. We live in India, and she think, no, it's better. Let's go to Ireland. Then we had the kids, so we come to Ireland here. So it's a 3-4 years now.
And it's a big, it's a big change in the landscape for you, Mohan, isn't it?
Not really. Yes, okay. some landscape. Yes, because the mountain in Himalaya is very taller and steep. Here you have hills, but still you can see mountain. But weather is also cold, and you know, summer is hot. Not very different. Greenery is Himalaya, but rest of the India is different climate. But in Himalaya is cold, extreme, windy sometimes. Good weather, bad weather. It's not very different than Donegal.
During your times leading Himalayan trips, I mean, it's a dangerous occupation, isn't it?
Well, you're working, and if you're getting food, and if you don't have, you know, other option to earn money and having food, and you know, going for like studying, getting money for your education, you don't think about, you know, if there's any other jobs which is more easier. You only have one option, so go for it. Mm. There's not so much choice. So yes, it is, because if you're going more than 4,000, 5,000, and they will be risky to get high altitude sickness. But as we burn in Himalaya, so we don't get that too often. I think we are, our, you know, system is adopting that climate and condition.
I suppose it's all relative to where you're from and your background. Now, yeah. What have you been doing in Ireland since you moved here?
First, I come here. I was very excited about the, you know, landscape and beauties and open space to do, like trekking and mountaineering. Oh, it would be great. So my intention was starting the small trekking company. But I started for 6 months, then I realized no, because you know, there's not so much tourism, you know, support and background and awareness about it, about how beautiful this place is, and how much you know. Like how much benefit people can get it from here. Not so much, I didn't find so much of awareness around, you know, like people can come and come into the board to going outside that time, like 3 years before.
Yeah.
And so that wouldn't be the source of your, the main source of income. I have a family, so I need to think about something different. And I leave that. And my background from my family is I learned the Ayurvedic Indian, like holistic, and massage. Mm. It's called Ayurveda. So I start doing that, and it looks, people like it, and it's picked up well, and I'm continue doing. Now I'm doing same thing, and I have same customers. So I'm living with the massage, and I opened last year healthy, small, healthy, organic, try to be organic, local cafe in Falkara. It's called Cafe Ganesh. And I mix up between the locals and authentic Indian food.
Nice. It sounds sounds very exciting. Now, though, next year you've a big task ahead of you. You are joining forces with an organization to lead what's being described as the adventure of a lifetime. Briefly, tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, I met Moira in MNZ.iec. I like to encourage those who really wanted to, you know, doing something with Donegal to encourage the tourism, because need to bring lots of people, bring new, you know, type of adventure here to bring more tourists, and that can support the local, like, economy, even jobs, everything. So I met Moira, and I had an idea that, you know, we need to learn something, that Himalaya is not advanced country, like this Western European country. This is like you have money, but the place where I've come from, where I work, there's no money. Mm. But people are more aware of how to treat the tourism and how to bring the people in to, you know, encourage tourism and sustain the life. So it's a part of Ladakh where it's, when you fly from Delhi, you have to land in 3,500 meter high automatically, and In winter, it's severe, like minus 30 degree, and summer, there's only 4 month season. But people incredibly living there, and they're doing farming in summer, hard working, and they're encouraging people to come in for the tourism, monastic, like spiritual tourism, rafting, skiing, mountain biking. So it's a dry, cold desert. There's no trees. But people are living amazingly, and happiness is like everywhere.
Yeah.
And people sustaining. So why not Donegal, like area, which is so clean, pure, you know, can do something better.
And maybe with the Wild Atlantic Way and more perhaps drive from the authorities and more money too for marketing, what have you, that can be achieved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Only need is to learn how we can love this tourism and we can bring the people in and help the economy of the country or even the job for the Donegal people. Local people are training for the adventure, but they have no jobs, you know, and they train, no job. So that something can be learned and people can learn and we can see more things and we can learn the culture, extend the culture, farming, and, you know, how people... like encourage the tourism, basically, or hospitality, many things, and also the, how they explain about their, you know, ancient, like Buddhisms and all.
Yeah.
Why don't this Donegal can be explaining the ancient Catholic churches and histories and all that for tourism, making interesting.
Yeah, so, embrace it more, perhaps, than we do. So you're looking forward to next August. You're leading this 17-day Himalayan adventure.
Yes.
More information is available, as you mentioned, I presume, mng.ie.
Yeah.
And people have an opportunity to go with you.
Yes, so we have already 6-7 people confirm. I think 6 is a confirm sign up. So
excellent.
Now there's a few inquiries. So we're thinking to take at least 15 to 20 people. And like confirmation of tour is already done. So we will definitely going to take the people. But we're looking for more to join. As soon people sign up, to, like it will close. And yeah, and we'll be ready to take them.
Excellent.
And it will be the lifetime adventure. Yeah.
Mohan, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. And a really interesting observation how your home area, as it was, has developed to maximize tourism potential and maybe what we can learn from that. So it's an interesting crossover. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Mohan.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Champion
very much.
Afternoon tea at Cafe Arnoux Cocktail and Wine Bar, Dunfanaghy. The perfect way to enjoy your afternoon. Cafe Arnoux Dunfanaghy are sponsors of the weekend edition.
In Saturday's Irish Independent, a survey of over 100 GP surgeries nationwide reveals massive variations in the price of a consultation. Just how much more are you paying to visit your GP than everyone else? In Weekend Magazine, 50 ways to save money this Christmas in our budget-boosting guide. Plus, get the final book in our children's I Wonder Why collection free at Tesco. Saturday begins with the Irish Independent. Before you make up your mind, open it. Terms and conditions apply.
Why buy three when less will do?
At McGee's Chemist this Christmas, you'll pay less. That's a fact. In men's, Nivea for men sets from $3.99. David Beckham sets from $4.99. Old Spice sets from $4.99. Gillette sets from $4.99. Link sets from $5.99.
McGee's Chemist, Main Street, Letterkenny. Where the best costs less.
Farrah Vintage, Adidas Originals, Jack and Jones, Lyle and Scott, Tommy Hilfiger. All your favourite top brands at Evolve Menswear this Christmas season. Casual, formal and footwear. You'll find it all at Evolve Menswear Letterkenny. Christmas Club now open. Donegal's largest menswear store.
The perfect present. Mandarin Palace Christmas gift vouchers for family and friends. Christmas party nights still available. For reservations, telephone 02871 373 656 or visit mandarinkarma.com. Serving Donegal, Derry and the North West for over 25 years. The Mandarin Palace would like to wish all our customers a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Penalty point changes are being made which will help protect learner and novice drivers. A learner permit holder must be accompanied by a person who holds a full license for at least 2 years and must display L plates on the vehicle. A newly qualified driver with a full license must display N plates on the vehicle for 2 years. A learner or newly qualified motorcyclist must wear a tabard displaying the letter L or N on the front and back for 2 years. Non-compliance will be an offence, incurring 2 penalty points on payment of a fixed charge or 4 penalty points on court conviction. For further details of the changes and a full list of penalty point offences and fixed charges, visit rsa.ie.
Make savings on your Christmas shopping this weekend at the Christmas sale at the Cove Dunlow. There's two large Yankee candles for €30, 25% of Christmas decorations, and laptop bundles for €350. The Cove's Main Street department stores are also open tomorrow from 12 till 6.
OK, we are quite literally out of time. No time to jam in our last piece, so we'll carry that over to next week. Thank you so much to everyone who listened to the programme today. And don't forget, you can listen back to it at highlandradio.com /something or other that I can't remember. But it's certainly in the entertainment and playback section, so you'll find that on the front page. Thanks very much to, as I say, everyone who contributed to the programme today, particularly Yvonne McFadden, who produced and put the show together. I'm back with you on the weekend edition next Saturday between 10 and 12.